Mantras 9 to 14, different grades of non-devotees. The opening of Sri Upanishad, invocation to Mantra 3, discusses the perfection and the completeness of the Lord and His energies, as well as the appropriate consciousness that is to be cultivated by the human beings, Ishavasya. Mantra 3 describes the destination of those who reject to follow the Ishavasya principle. Mantras 4 to 8 elaborate on the inconceivable characteristics of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and on the qualification of the Mahabhagavata devotee. Mantras 9 to 14 depict different grades of people bereft of Ishavasya consciousness and the various inauspicious results they bear. Different types of worship bring different consequences. In order to achieve success, one must know side by side the transcendental Lord and His material creation. Mantras 9 to 11 compare the different results of cultivating knowledge and indulging in ignorance. Mantras 12 to 14 evaluate the worship of the Absolute Truth and the worship of the relative truths. So, Ishopanishad opens with the main principle, everything will be based on this, which is Ishavasya concept. And that means that God is the proprietor of everything and He pervades everything. He's the controller. He's the supreme enjoyer and everything should be used in connection to Him and for His pleasure. So those who understand this and apply it in life, this is Mantra 2, they get spiritual result. And those who don't apply, this is Mantra 3, they get material result. So this is where it ends, you can say. This is the whole Ishopanishad in a nutshell. It ends with the Mantra 3. Then, Mantra 4 to 8. We already spoke about this. It describes how this rule explained in the beginning, the Ishavasya, how it is applied in life, and especially in connection with the inconceivable qualities of the Lord. Because if someone applies this Ishavasya concept, only then he will be able to perceive and appreciate these transcendental qualities. They are described in Mantras 4th and 5th. And then the rest. The next mantras, they describe the consciousness of the Mahabhagavata devotee who sees everything in relation to Krishna. Mantras 6 to 8. So this is the elaboration on mantra 2, which explains that if you apply the Ishavasya concept, you'll get spiritual result. So these mantras 4 to 8, they explain more in detail how it is done, in relation with the qualities of Krishna. And now mantras 9 to 14, they actually elaborate on mantra 3, where it is stated that if one doesn't apply this principle, then he will have to suffer. So how actually and why he has to suffer, and what are the different ways that you can miss the point of Vishuvasya? This is described in these mantras, 9 till 14. We see again the same way of presentation. First is establish the rule, and then different aberrations of this rule are presented. In this way, when the truth is established first, then everything else is seen and judged in relationship, in connection with this truth. And all the mistakes, all false theories, they're actually seen in connection to the truth, to the real thing, and not otherwise. And in this way, it is very easy, when the truth is established, it's very easy to, and it's understand, then it's very easy to understand what is the falsity. It's very easy. It's just like, if you understand the Vedic, what is Vedic, then modern is very easy to define. Modern is everything that is not Vedic. Modern is everything that doesn't follow the Vedic authority. Or the same is with the taste and atheist. If you understand what theism or God consciousness means, then it's easy to understand atheism. It just rejects God. And also it's important because atheism, modern, all this anomalies, they don't have stand on their own. They're always connected with the absolute truth. They can be explained only in connection with this. They don't have existence on their own. They don't have substance on their own. Okay, mantra 9. Misguided knowledge is more dangerous than nations. This is the thesis. In mantra 9, two types of materialists are described, the materially ignorant and the materially educated. Of the two, the second group is worse.
This mantra offers a comparative study of vidya and avidya. Avidya or ignorance is undoubtedly dangerous, but vidya or knowledge is even more dangerous than mistaken or misguided. Shisha Panishad, Mantra 9, 4.
Again for the page.
Why mistaken knowledge is more harmful than ignorance? As far as avidya is concerned, the first mantra has explained very clearly that the Supreme Lord is the proprietor of everything, and that forgetfulness of this fact is ignorance. The more a man forgets this fact of life, the more he is in darkness. In view of this, a godless civilization directed toward the so-called advancement of education is more dangerous than a civilization in which the masses of people are less educated.
Thank you. So if someone doesn't see the connection to God, then this is bad for him and he'll have to suffer. This is clear. But at least, in most cases, such people, they are not militant against God consciousness. They are just simple, ignorant people. And then it's just a matter of explaining to them that you're suffering because your life is not in line with God's desire. And if you bring it in line with God consciousness, then it will be better for you. You'll have better quality of life. Then most of these people, they'll accept at least to some extent. Because they know, I'm just an ignorant man. I don't know what is going on. They just work, they get some money, they use it for standard education, they buy drink, they watch football, and that's their life. And they're satisfied. But they know I'm ignorant, I don't know. But the educated class, even if we speak in a Vedic context, the impersonalists, they already have so many ideas about life. They already know so many things that they'll definitely leave Krishna outside. They'll definitely be have problem with the God consciousness. If you, let's say, if you point to them that you see this is, for example, everything in the universe works so nicely. That means there is a someone who made it to work like this. It's must be some person who created this. Then they will say, no, this is just, we have already scientific proof that it is not like this, and matter just evolves. And this is, these are all things coming from the Middle Ages. These are these medieval philosophers who try to manufacture a proof for the existence of God. We don't accept this anymore. So we know what's going on. It's just scientific facts and truths. So they'll leave God outside because they have already so many ideas. So that's why they are actually more dangerous, because usually these kind of people, they take high positions in the society, and they can influence many other people. These ignorant, simple people, they are actually most of the time under their influence, and this is why they are more dangerous for themselves and for the society also. Because one of the main reasons why they are so dangerous and why they don't accept God consciousness is that they are very proud. And this is why in Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna describes knowledge, he, the first thing he mentions is amanitvam adambitvam. One should be humble. Only in this way he can attain actually any kind of knowledge, material or spiritual. If he's not humble, he cannot progress in life. Okay, go on. The so-called intellectuals and scholars who support and facilitate sanctification are doing more harm than the laymen engaged in it. According to Dharma Shastra, if one follows a false philosophy, he will receive the reaction for it. However, if one manufactures his own philosophy and speaks it, thus misleading others, he receives 100 times the reaction for it. On the other hand, if someone knows the truth but does not present it for the benefit of all, he is also considered sinful. Those who worship with false knowledge fall into blinding darkness, and those who worship with true knowledge alone, without correcting false knowledge, fall into even greater darkness. This is from Madhvacharya's commentary on Nishpanishad, this mantra 9. So here we have different levels. First, the best is someone who is in knowledge, he is practicing this knowledge, he is preaching for the benefit of others. Then you have persons who they are in knowledge but they don't preach. So they practice for their own benefit. And then you have the standard ignorant, simple person who doesn't have knowledge, but he is simple. He doesn't really have a philosophy. He just follows the pushings of his senses. Well, of course, he has a philosophy. Everybody has to work on some philosophy. But his philosophy is very simple. He just gets money and enjoys his senses to the best of his abilities. But he's not against God consciousness.
So basically animal.
Sorry?
Basically animal.
Yeah. Not really, because he could understand if God consciousness, if it is presented to him properly, because he's not offensive, he's not against, he just doesn't know anything better. Then you have persons who actually they are convinced atheists, they have philosophy, very complicated, sophisticated philosophy, they are, but at least they don't preach to others. They're not necessarily a very active preaching this. So they keep this for themselves. If you ask them, they'll tell you, but they are not active preaching this. And then at the bottom you have those who have philosophy, they're atheists, they have philosophy against God consciousness, they preach this to others and mislead so many other people. So these are the worst, these are the most dangerous cases here. And of course you have also those who, on the other hand, if someone knows the truth but does not present it for the benefit of all, he is also considered sinful. So these are people who have, they have knowledge, they know about Krishna, they get opportunity to preach, but they don't use it, they don't take it. The reason may be that they feel that they will, because of lack of faith, they feel that they will disturb actually the other people, and what they will think about me, maybe it's not appropriate in the environment, whatever is the reason. So this is more, this is connected to the next quote. Srila Prabhupada defines non-violence as follows. Non-violence is generally taken to mean not killing or destroying the body, but actually non-violence means not to put others into distress. People in general are trapped by ignorance in the material concept of life, and they perpetually suffer material pains. So unless one elevates people to spiritual knowledge, one is practicing violence. One should try his best to distribute real knowledge to the people so that they may become enlightened and leave this material entanglement. That is non-violence. So because violence means repeated birth and death, this is violence for the soul, because soul is eternal. So as long as this cycle repeats, violence repeats itself, then violence continues. And if someone can stop this by preaching Krishna consciousness and he doesn't, actually he commits violence. It's part of the vicious circle. It's an act of violence. That's why preaching is so important. Okay. These misguided educators are described in Bhagavad Gita as Maya Pakrita Jnana Asuram Bhava Mashrita Veda Vada Rata.
You said something about the reaction. It says like 100 times.
Yes.
You have knowledge, but you act in it. There's often these things 1 time, 10 times, 100 times. Can you say something about this? If you don't do it, you get 1 time, and you might forget something. 100 times, you might forget everything. Can you say something about that?
You mean the proportion of the reaction?
Yes. One time, 100. What's an example that we can see?
It's like killing an animal, low animal, not cow. Then you get reaction. But if you kill a cow, then the reaction is much more severe. Like you have to take birth. The hair on the body of the cow, so many times you have to take birth and be killed in the same way.
In relation to knowledge.
In relation to knowledge. Difficult to think of an example right now. Knowledge. Well, the story of Yajnavalkya, he committed offense against his against his god brothers, and then he was ordered to return the knowledge he had attained from his guru, and then he was empty, you don't have any knowledge anymore. Something like this example. I think here 100 times the reaction of it, it's more in line of more suffering, not necessarily only losing knowledge, but more suffering, more intense suffering, going to deeper, darkest region of the universe. This is what Ishpanishad means.
Gopal Chakravarti, who was preaching, despite the shadow of the holy name, you get liberation. He said that this is nonsense. All sort of stuff like this, and he blasphemed.
How did that?
And then his nose melted off, and his fingers. He got leprosy.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, very nice example. Because he actually had knowledge. He was educated. Because of this, he actually got himself into trouble, because he knew he could quote some shastra. Of course, he quoted this shastra in a perverted way, but he was opposing the conclusions of the Mahabhagavat devotee of Haridas Thakur, quoting shastra. And this is a very good example of someone who has knowledge, who is educated, but he is opposing God consciousness, and he's getting himself into deep trouble. Yeah, very nice example. Yes,
what is the deepest, darkest region of the material world?
Prabhupada says the greatest type of fear is to take birth as an animal, for a human being to take birth as an animal, not to realize that you're
going to hell. Then after hell you have to take birth as an animal. Because in hell the consciousness is reduced by applying pain. Human being goes to hell, then they have to reduce his consciousness into the animal level. So this happens by pain. So this is the procedure there. And then after you're ready, the consciousness is reduced so much that actually you can enter into animal body and feel okay. Then after this, they go to animal. It's pretty scary. Yes?
On this point of non-violence, Prabhupada defines not violence as not trying to elevate people, but sometimes devotees in the attempt to preach to people, they become quite pushy to the point of being disturbing other people's minds. So how to balance this principle of violence and non-violence?
Yes, Srila Prabhupada also said that if you go to someone and preach to him, let's say trying to distribute book to him, and as a result of your preaching he leaves and he's angry, that means this is your fault, because you couldn't attract this person to Krishna, because you preached in a improper way, not according to time, place, circumstance. So both of these statements are there. We should be actively preaching, but we should preach according to place, time, circumstance properly, so that people are actually attracted, not distracted. So how to make this balance? It's a question of proper training and realization, applying in the process, getting someone who can guide you in this, because it is a science, but it is an art also. Like you have book distributors who are very expert in distributing books, but they cannot train anybody to distribute books. They don't even want anybody around them when they distribute books. We have such devotees, very nice, but if you go with them and they distribute books, and someone is around them looking and trying to understand how it works, then they're very disturbed. They don't like this. And you have others who can do it. They don't have problem with this. So, to find someone that can teach you this. And also observe how the expert preachers, how they do. Prabhupada, how he was preaching, and others also.
So is this also connected to the austerity of the speech, that what we should speak should be pleasing and beneficial?
Yes, yes. Pleasing, beneficial. And also constantly we should quote the Vedic literature. Otherwise there is a danger that we can just speculate. It sounds very nice, very Krishna conscious, but if we don't quote constantly the Vedas, and in this way we don't keep our mind always connected with the Shastra, then there is a danger after some time we just can deviate. So this is also in this verse of Gita. The austerity of the speech is what you said, and also this always quoting the Vedas.
But understanding the context, not taking it out of context.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I have also seen devotees who's constantly, using the scriptures as a reference, but they haven't understood the Sambandha problem. So they're not reaching according to time, place, and circumstance because of that.
Yeah.
My question was, why do people who don't know how to teach people to distribute books, why do they get annoyed if someone hears them?
What
causes
why they get annoyed?
Yeah,
if someone is looking at them, why they distribute books?
Yeah. It's because they don't want the other person to learn?
No, not necessarily. It's just a matter of individual preferences. Some people are very shy, you know. You have this? I mean, you've seen such devotees. There's no way.
They just don't have this ability to teach others.
Speak well?
They just don't have this ability to teach others.
They're not gifted as teachers.
Yeah.
Well, it might be something else also, because I've been making music earlier, but when I tried to teach people, I completely froze up. I couldn't do anything. So there's a certain intimacy when you're dealing with people on the street, and you're in a certain way intimate with them, and when someone else is watching that, that can be very disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's not even because they don't know how to teach, it's just their focus shifts from the people they're approaching to suddenly someone's watching me.
Yeah, it could be, yes. Good point.
Could it also be that these people, they're approaching it from the side of the art and not the science and art, if you're thinking too much about it, it kind of gets slow.
Yeah, they can do it.
Experience of doing it.
Yeah, they can do it themselves, but when they have to explain how it works, they have difficulties. Yeah, could be also that. But could be that they understand also the science, but they're just not inclined. Yeah, because it's trouble to teach others. It's trouble. For the time you, the same time that you use to teach, you could distribute 100 books. So it depends on the value system, if what is valuable for you. If it's just the result, you get the result and it's for Krishna's pleasure, that's fine. Oh, yeah. And this is your value, but if the value is that we want to help others, to expand this mission, to teach others also, then you'll take the trouble. But if it's not, then you just don't bother. You just do your own thing and fine. Okay. The Mayapakrita Gyana class of men are self-made gods. Such men think that they themselves are gods and that there is no need of worshipping any other god. Are we here? They will agree to worship an ordinary man if he happens to be rich, but they will never worship the personality of Godhead. The Mayapakrita Gyana category therefore includes the Mayavadis and the atheistic scholars. In his commentary on Bhagavad Gita, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur describes the Mayapakrita Gyana and Asuram Bhavam Ashrita as follows.
Mayaya apahita jnana. Those whose knowledge has been stolen by Maya, even after studying the Shastra. They think that only the form of Sri Narayan, situated in Vaikuntha, can be served eternally and can grant eternal bhakti. One cannot perform bhakti eternally to other forms, such as Rama and Krishna, because they are human-like. Sri Bhagavan has said in the Gita, 9:11, "Fools disrespect me when I appear in my human form. After apparently surrendering unto me, they have not surrendered in reality." Asuram bhavam ashrita. Asuras such as Jarasandha shoot arrows in order to hurt my transcendental body. Similarly, persons who carry this asurika bhava use illogical reasoning to deny my Sri Vigraha, which is eternally situated in Vaikuntha. They do not surrender unto me.
Thank you. The third kind of misguided educators, Vedavada Ratas, pose as Vedic authorities, but in reality, they divert their followers from the actual purpose of the Vedas, which is to know and serve the Supreme Personality of God, Sri Krishna. They don't follow the Acharyas and create their own philosophy to justify their lusty desires. The Vedavada Ratas are described in Bhagavad Gita. Men of small knowledge are very much attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various fruitive activities for elevation to heavenly planets, resultant good birth, power, and so forth. Being desirous of sense gratification and opulent life, they say that there is nothing more than this. So here we have three unfortunate positions. First, Maya Pakhita Jnana, who think that only Narayan in Vaikuntha should be worshipped, and when Krishna or Rama come in the material world, actually they are not the real Lord, because their body is temporary, so they are not worthy of worship. And then Asuram Bhava Mashrika, they try to kill the body of the Lord. The Asuras also, this is the dream of the Asuras. They want to kill Krishna always. When Vishnu comes to the, or Krishna comes to the material world, the Asuras, this is their dream. Because if they succeed in killing the Lord, then the universe is theirs forever. They always try to kill him. And in the same way, the atheistic scholars, they try to kill the personal aspect of Krishna by manufacturing all types of false arguments. That actually there is no such thing as personal Lord. And the Vedavada Ratas, the third position, who are so attached to the Karma Kanda portion of the Vedas, that they say, because they are so attached, they say there is nothing higher than this. That's all that there is in the Vedas. Just going to the heaven, enjoying there. And they even have philosophy that if you perform always pious activities, then you always be in heaven. You just come very shortly to the karma stan, to the earth. But if you in proper consciousness, you again pick up the Vedic lifestyle, you perform sacrifices, and very shortly, just for 100 years, which is nothing, then you go again to the heaven and enjoy there again for a very long period. So they say, yes, it is temporary, this material object for my enjoyment is temporary. But the idea of enjoyment is eternal. So this woman is temporary. But there will be another woman after this, or another thing for enjoyment. So as long as I perform past karma, I'll be enjoying eternally. And therefore they say there is nothing more than this in the Vedas. It's just this, the flowery words of the Vedas. So these are the Vedavada Ratas. Yes.
The Maya Prahita Jnana. The only problem with them is that they think only Narayan is not Krishna.
This will be one.
One category.
Yes, inside of this. Because we see other times they don't even accept that there is an Narayana at all. A particular type here, Mahaprakriti Gyana. Specific type is described. The real goal of religion is not to achieve temporary material pleasures by karma, as proposed by the Veda Vadaratas, or to become God by mental speculation, as proposed by the Mahaprakriti Gyanas. The ultimate purpose of religion is to bring one back to Godhead by teaching him how to act with proper knowledge, Ishavasya, or Buddhi Yoga. Okay, we should end here. Yes. They could be.
But they could also be the dancers.
No, not necessarily. No, because Vedanta means you try to liberate yourself from material consciousness, but the Veda Vadaratas, they try to indulge themselves. They try to as much as possible to enjoy. So they are not gyanis, they are more karmis, the karma kind of problem. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.